It's time now for Stockhouse's Drunken Roundtable, where we gather our in-house experts and the occasional guest around a table to discuss the trends, the companies, and the personalities behind them, all over a beer.
Hi, and welcome to Stockhouse's latest edition of the Drunken Fireside Everything is Crumbling Stock Market Chat. With me today is Peter Kennedy, Resources Beat Writer, Galen Engen, Technology Beat Writer, and I'm your humble weed and fashion writer, Chris Parry. I say fashion because I've written more articles about fashion than I have about resources this year. Not because I particularly look like I'm fashionable in any way, shape, or form. So the general concept of this podcast is that we get together, we empty the fridge of any beers that may have been left over the course of the week, and we drunkenly ramble about things that we found this week in our relative sectors. We seem to have no beers, so this may be a more cogent than usual edition of
our sober version.
Yes. So I'm going to push it over to Galen, our tech man, to talk a little bit about what he's discovered this week in the tech world.
Well, this one's actually been around for a while, but it really is now starting to take off, and I think it actually deserves some attention because this thing is poised, I think, on the edge of actually capturing a huge amount of market share of a multi-billion dollar home care market. This is patient home monitoring. Now, we're all familiar with the trend of hospitals and care stations pushing people out of the beds and sending them back home, because it obviously costs insurance companies a lot less to have the patient in their own home rather than in a facility. What patient home monitoring is a roll-up strategy that's taking different companies and then essentially providing a service, acting as a care coordinator for these different facets of the business. Usually what we have is a fragmented market right now where you've got a small company offering cardiology monitoring, another company offering pulmonology monitoring, another company offering diabetes monitoring. And so what patient home monitoring is trying to do and what its strategy is to acquire these different facets of the business and then cross-sell across these databases, because you'll find as people get older and they're 65 and such, they tend to have more than one ailment, because you're getting close.
I'm getting close. just this year, you're getting really close.
Yes, exactly. So essentially, their idea is to treat across these different databases and grow their revenue in both organically and inorganically, and they've been rather successful doing it. In fact, in the last 8 months, they've done this particular operation like 8 different times, and in the process of doing so, have actually, 22 months, have actually reached a $115 million in revenue, 45 of which came from their cross-selling efforts, which shows about a 50% markup on their revenue coming from that particular type of effort. And essentially, they could see, you know, $1 billion worth of sales within 3 years. And they're also predicting like a $200 million exit, perhaps even within this year. So the company, oddly enough, is at this point being run by a couple of private equity fund managers, Michael Dowson and Roger Green, which you wouldn't typically see in this type of operation. You'd see like a doctor or somebody within that healthcare sector trying to operate things. But I think the reason why this company is so incredibly robust on the balance sheet and also in its business projections is because of these guys' involvement. And their particular responsibilities are to hold management of these different operations to their feet to the fire and make sure that they're performing on an optimal basis and don't necessarily themselves get involved in day-to-day operations. So I think this is a winner.
Let's do a little bit of role-playing.
Do it.
I am an aged woman watching Maury in her home.
I can see it.
Oh, my hip. Yes. My hip is hurting me. I can't reach the phone.
Right.
Thank goodness for patient home monitoring.
Not necessarily that. Okay. What happens is that you'll have like an ongoing chronic condition, pulmonary disease.
Okay. My ticker is given out. Thank goodness for patient home monitoring.
Again, not necessarily the situation that you're going, oh, I need to read my diabetes blood sugar level. Instead of having to go to the hospital, I can actually turn and push this little button on this monitoring machine, which will now remotely transmit this information to both my doctor, my healthcare provider, and everybody all knows that I'm online.
All right. Patient, let me try again.
Okay. Try.
My diabetes levels. Thank goodness for, oh, it's another episode of Maury. What's this thing doing to my arm? It says transmitted.
I don't think
I'm
you're
still
covering.
Alive. Thank goodness for patient home monitoring.
Everything except for the Alzheimer's aspect of it, I think is pretty good.
You know there's going to be an Alzheimer's aspect.
Yeah, of course.
So is the profit potential already seen on this company, or is it something that where the stock price has some room to combustle?
The stock price actually has some room to grow, even though right now it's at a pretty good rate, and it's getting better at a pretty good clip. We're looking about $1.40, I think, at this point in time. But I could see this thing hitting about $10 a share.
Wow, that's a big call.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in similar sort of roll-up fashion, I'm going to take over here and talk about a company called Invictus MD Strategies, which is a Stockhouse publishing marketing client, which I guess patient home monitoring is also.
Yes, actually, I should make that point.
Which is why Galen knows so much about it.
Yeah.
So Invictus is a similar sort of deal in the weed sector, in as much as it's taking advantage of a down market and rolling up companies that are not necessarily grow companies, but companies that are around the grow companies. So Invictus's case, they've got Cannabis Health Journal, which is like a magazine that's been around for a bunch of years. They've got Edison Vape, which is putting together vape technologies for accessories around medical marijuana. And they've got a company called Future Harvest, which is a hydroponics company out in Edmonton. Now, what Invictus does is something similar to what you were talking about, in that they go in, they find these companies that are good, have good bones about them, and then they send in the financial ninjas to rip things to shreds and put them back in such a way that they're streamlined and much more profitable. And by putting them together with their other verticals, allow them to increase sales and increase exposure. So in Future Harvest's situation, it's a 20-year-old business out of Edmonton. I believe they have an 800-square-foot store in like West Edmonton Mall.
Mm-hmm.
They make about $4 million a year, mostly in like export in online sales.
Right.
But you know, it's a mom-and-pop operation. In comes Invictus, takes a little piece of it, sends in their guys. Their guys find ways to increase sales dramatically. And the first month after putting their people in there, they set a sales record, which isn't bad for a 20-year operation. So over the last few months, every time Future Harvest hits a milestone, it activates another 25% increase in Invictus' stake in the company. So now, this past week, they dropped in over the 50% mark.
Mm-hmm.
The company's doing exactly what they wanted it to do, and they're looking like they're going to release some financial numbers soon. And from what I understand, there are potentially a couple of deals in the wind that might come around very soon. So in a marijuana sector in which there are so many weirdos, this is a good grown-up play that, you know, as the market moves more into acquisition mode, there's potential for these guys to flip some of the assets that they've bought. They're certainly adding value to the people who sold them part of their assets. And as it builds out, I expect it to be a much bigger play than the 15, 16 cents it's at right now. That's Invictus MD Strategies. It is ticker symbol C.IMH.
Nice.
And with that, we move to Pete. Pete of the resources.
Okay, so the thing that caught my attention this week was a... it was a buy recommendation by Andrew Cape. He's with BMO Capital Markets. He has set a target of $16 on an outperform rating on a company called Barrick Gold Corp, which, as some of you might know, is the world's largest gold producer. Now, the reason this caught my attention was because I haven't seen anything that good that's been said about Barrick Gold in recent months and years. It's been a sort of a litany of bad news and operating problems and cost overruns. And the stock is trading roughly at 20-year lows this week at 13, or actually today at 13.56. So it has some way to go to reach Andrew Cape's $16 target. So how did he arrive at that? So just to give you some background, Barrick is kind of near and dear to my heart because in my sort of early days as a reporter, one of the first trips I ever did was I took a trip down with a company called Franco-Nevada Gold, and they had a royalty on the Gold Strike property, which is the property in Nevada that made it helped propel Barrick Gold to become the world's largest gold producer. So that was sort of in the mid, sort of in the 1986 area. And then sort of in the following years, it was, Barrick Gold was a star performer. Made Peter Munk, who had previously been involved with a disaster called Claretone, into sort of a superstar. Franco-Nevada, who had the royalty on the Goldstrike property, the two principals, Pierre Lassonde and Seymour Schulich, became so rich that Seymour Schulich is now a philanthropist. I think he made about 500 million of his shares in Franco. Although he still lives up in on Bathurst Street in Toronto. So anyway, so I guess with that success, they picked up more assets, and I guess the when you're buying assets, you tend to run into problems, and that happened big time with their Pascua Lama project, which was located on the border of Argentina and Chile, and I think it was a court case over, and they, that led to cost overruns, I think, of $8 billion so far, which is a substantial sum even for a company of Barrick's size, which currently has a market cap at the moment of $15.8 billion. So Pascua Lama was bad news, and then of course Peter Munk was getting old and looking around for a successor, and he picked a guy called John Thornton, who was just reading about him today. He's very well connected in China. Spent a decade as a professor at the Beijing's Tsinghua University. He was tipped to become the CEO of Goldman Sachs, and I understand that he used to play tennis with Ted Kennedy. So he was brought in as sort of the successor to Peter Munk. The problem was that Barrick, who had agreed to pay him a bonus of $12 million, I think people were up in arms over that. So a lot of bad news, and but then all of a sudden, I read today that Andrew Cape has this buy recommendation target of $16. One of the reasons for that, I think, is that he's confident that that Barrick will be able to reduce its $13 billion debt load by $3 billion this year, and it has already taken some steps along the road to that target by selling its Cowell mine, and also its interests in the Porgera operation. And there's optimistic that Barrick will be able to sell its 50% interest in the Zaldivar copper mine in Chile, and that would reduce the debt by another $1 billion.
All right, role play time. I'm Barrick Gold, sitting watching Maury.
Yep.
Oh, my ticker. I've spent too much money on bad pizza. What am I going to... Oh, wait a second. I feel better now. Thank you, Andrew Cape.
So you think they're actually going to pull it out of the fire?
Well, they've got good assets, right?
Is this indicative of the turnaround? Like, there's a lot of talk I heard at Cambridge House, the empty, vast empty spaces of Cambridge House, about how people were thinking like October, November is when they expect things will bounce off the bottom. Do you think this is an indicator that maybe we're scratching that bottom surface?
I think it could partially be an indication of that. I think it's just an indication that Barrick is, I mean, it finally, I guess they've said that, I mean, I think that Peter Munk is somebody with some kind of business savvy, and I think that he would have tried to bring in the right guy to turn things around. I think that Thornton, he seems like he has a good track record. He has a reputation for taking the long view. I mean, you're not going to turn a company like Barrick Gold around overnight, because, I mean, they've got 15 mines in 9 countries. So trying to turn something like that around is just like trying to turn a double-decker bus around in a laneway kind of thing. So the expectation is that they're going to do 6 million ounces with all-in sustaining costs ranging from US 860 bucks at 95. So at the current gold price, I think it's about 1200. I guess that's very profitable at current levels.
So they're not dead yet.
So that, I don't think they're dead yet, and they've got very good assets. They're also saying that it's a back to the future story, that they're going to focus more on Nevada, where they have still have, which is still sort of the heartbeat of the company.
There you go.
Right on.
Marty McFly. Marty McFly.
Now we move to the short explanation sector, because we've all been very verbose.
We have. I'm going to crank this out really quickly.
Minutes or less. Go.
2 minutes or less. All right. This is Convallo Health, another venture done by Roger Green and Michael Dalson. This is an aspect that everybody is well familiar with, the idea that addiction treatment in the U.S. has been highly inaccessible for many years.
Is this another roll-up? Is that what we're talking
this
about?
This is another roll-up.
This has been the roll-up episode.
It is the roll-up episode. Yeah. Effectively, what we've had is that, you know, the well-heeled and the well-known were always going in to get dried out. But, I mean, if you weren't Robert Downey Jr. fresh off a Coke binge, you weren't getting in the door. So what Convallo was doing is actually creating an environment by optimizing what they like to call pods. There are three different facets to addiction recovery. You've got your initial addiction treatment centers, then you have your residential beds, and then you have your outpatient treatment. And so what they're doing is they're getting three different facets. They're buying them. They're all the fragmented market. They're centering on large metropolises like Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Miami. And they're buying these pods. And what they're doing is they're finding that by optimizing these things, they don't need a lot of patients. They can make hundreds of patients and bring in revenues of $50 million. In regards to these treatment centers, which effectively is a lot less expensive than these people trying to sort of run through, you know, state-run agencies. Their biggest challenge, of course, is to remain hip because, wouldn't you know it, many of the addicts they're treating are between 20 and 25. Ah, to be privileged.
I want to stay in the door of the Explorer suite.
Exactly. So they're right now sitting at about $50 million in revenue in L.A. They've only got about two pods running at this point in time. They're looking at deals in San Francisco. They're talking about stuff in Miami. The ability for them to make all these things happen, they're looking at, again, about a $200 million revenue stream in the next 12 months, if not earlier. Again, $1 billion potential, at least within the states, and only by hitting specific markets. They're not going crazy. They're just doing what they should have done in the first place and managing to wrap up all these fragmented businesses. So, again, huge potential. Probably going to see this one run up to about 10 bucks a share.
Are we sure that there's always going to be a need for rehab?
Well, you know, it depends on how society considers somebody who does way too many drugs. If that gets to a point where it just doesn't matter anymore, then perhaps it won't be an industry to get into. But considering how there is this general frowning on being high 24 hours a day, that may never go down.
Crazy talk.
Yeah.
All right. So ticker symbol?
Ticker symbol is V.CXV. Again, a Stockhouse Publishing client.
Nah, another Stockhouse Publishing client. Yeah. It's because we have lots of clients, even in a crappy market.
We do.
Two companies that are not clients, although one used to be, Tweed and Bedrican. So while we're talking of the rolling up of industries,
they bought each other up.
The weed industry has been, I was on a panel at Canvas 2015, and I said, look, there's going to be acquisitions real quickly in the weed business. And I specifically said Tweed was sniffing around a whole bunch of behinds and looking for the best place to stick its nose. And I heard that they were going after some small players here and there, and that they'd been refused on a couple of those. I did not expect them to come out basically acquiring the number two company, or what I would be considered to be the number two company in the space in Canada. So they acquired Bedrican. They valued them at $61 million, which is almost double of where they were market cap-wise before the announcement. Bedrican are very serious people. They're looking not at the we'll sell weed to everybody market, but the eventually weed will be in many pharmaceutical products, and we want to be on the edge of that space. They also have the only permission to sell imported product, which no one else has. So in doing this deal, Tweed has managed to give both companies a bit of a nudge in share price. And they've also managed to create a company that has a combined 5,000 patients, which is still pretty damn small when you consider that there are dispensaries in California that have 30,000 patients on their list. But in terms of Canada, that's a big share of the market, such as it is. So I would expect that there's going to be more of these acquisitions. Certainly, there's a lot of companies that are positioning themselves to be acquired. I heard one company just today that apparently has let half of its staff go, which I'm anticipating is either a sign that the company is about to collapse or that they're cleaning up the books to get acquired. So I think just about everything in the weed space right now is undervalued. If you look at Organigram, when it came out on the market almost a year ago, it was at $1.97. It's now at 30 cents. Its market cap is almost the same as Creative Edge Nutrition, which is a company that was refused a license, has no zoning, has no facility, and has decided to make energy drinks. Same market
That's a
cap
good solid direction.
As Organigram, which is a legitimate licensed company, which is doing its big thing. So I think Organigram is a big target. And I think rather than companies going through the hoops of having to get Health Canada licensing, you're going to get a lot of companies that are going to set up little small outfits that can fit into these existing bigger companies that have the existing licenses. To that end, I heard from a company this afternoon that is planning to completely alter its MMPR application to basically, you know,
grow strawberries.
Fit into the strawberry growers, Apinori. I've been mocking them for a while because they said they're going to grow strawberries while they're waiting for their license, and they've, as far as I can tell, not sold one yet. I've gone through three crop rotations on my patio in the time since they said they were going to grow strawberries. They said yesterday, we're ready for our acquisition anytime, everybody, which I thought was pretty funny. But, you know, credit where it's due, they've actually got a crop of herbs out recently and sold, which not a lot of places have. The problem is the crop was sweet basil.
Ah, can't smoke that.
Different kind of herb. Credit where it's due, at least they're doing something with their facility, which is more than a lot of other places are. So I'm saying that anyone who's mildly interested in the weed space, look for established businesses that might be acquisition targets because the time is now.
All right.
And with that, we move back to resources.
Okay. I want to take a look at a company called Manitok Energy, which is a Stockhouse client company. It's trading at the moment at 76 cents. The market cap is 64 million. 85.1 million shares outstanding, and the 52-week range is $3.19 and 62. I guess the context for this would be, obviously we've had a big decline in the price of oil. It was $100 roughly this time last year. Currently down at 60. And so I guess Manitok is an oil and gas exploration story, Alberta focused. So in that sense, it's kind of faced a kind of a perfect storm in the last while, because not only has the oil price sunk, but who would have thought that we were going to see an NDP government getting elected in Alberta. So that, I think, that's caused a lot of nervousness, particularly in the area, you know, the questions about what this will do to affect the royalty system there, that affects what the oil patch companies have to pay.
Or are supposed to pay.
Are supposed to pay.
And haven't been for a while.
Yeah. Which is why there's an NDP government.
So I think that the government has sort of calmed some nerves by naming, I think, former Bank of Canada Governor David Dodge as an advisor. So I think people sort of feel a bit happier about that. But I was talking to Manitok CEO Maz Jeremiah during the week there, and he said he's not that worried about what they want to do about the royalty scheme, because most of their growth will be determined by their Entice property, which I gather is located on freehold ground. So it's not subject to the royalties that would impact the oil patch. And he feels that really, at the end of the day, probably what the government, if they want to do anything, they'll go after the big boys anyway. So I guess Manitok is a junior story. It's based on the Alberta foothills. Its thesis is to go after oil pools that were too small to be of interest to the big companies, but would be large enough to sort of move the dial for a company such as Manitok, which is, as I said, is trading currently trading at 76 cents. They've had some news recently in that they bought a large oil processing facility near their Entice property where they're doing a lot of drilling. They paid $65.1 million for that, and they also raised $16.8 million from a non-broker private placement. So they feel that that gives them more kind of control over their own destiny, be able to process their own production, send it to market. And so now the question now is whether they can get their production up to the targets, which I think they've said is 20,000 barrels of energy per day. They're currently at about 4,800, so I guess we'll see if they can do that. But I would be inclined to. He's a pretty experienced guy. He's been around for a while, and
I read a few stories about Manitok a year or two ago,
yeah.
and they were running about the same production levels then.
Yeah,
have they held off because the price of oil has been low, or is this just where they've been?
Well, they've actually stopped drilling for the first half of this year, and they made this acquisition, and I think they're going to have more drilling targets as a result of that. So there's going to be an effort now to get their production up. And I mean, the stock has come down a long way from where it was last August, where it was trading at $2.84. They had some...
It's a bargain at 70-something.
Yeah, so they had problems with constraints at their gas production in Stolberg. That's one of their foothills properties, and apparently this was due to pressure differentials between Manitok's production and the existing lower pressure production in the gathering system between Stolberg and the Ram River gas plant. But I guess now they're saying that they're moving their improved prospects to the Entice property, so I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Okay. I'm wondering if anyone can explain to me why, when gas is at 60% of what
it's
it was...
still going up at the pumps?
It's, like, higher than it was when it was at 100.
I know.
And when it dropped to, what, $50 a barrel?
Yep.
And that reflected to 99 cents
mm-hmm.
at the gas pump. Now it's back up to 60, and it's $1.40.
Yeah.
Who's making the money here? Because it ain't the guys drilling. It sure as hell ain't us. Like, someone in the middle there is just jacking us for everything it's worth. It doesn't make any sense. Is it just hedging? Is it like they're making as much money as they can while they can be, until we start setting fire to things?
I think that's the case. As much as the market will bear.
I'm getting jacked, man. I bought a new car when it was at 99 cents.
Aww.
And the guy at the showroom was like, hey, it's a turbo, so you know, you're going to have to get the higher grade of gas.
Yeah.
And I literally said, who cares? It's not like gas is going back up to $1.40.
Ha!
And then 2 weeks after I bought the damn thing, it was back up to $1.25.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't understand how Manitok can't be like making money hand over fist if we're getting charged the way it is. Like someone in the middle there.
It's the middleman.
It's the gas stations.
Yep.
Why I order.
The refiners. Guys that have it on hand.
Someone needs to roll up the gas stations.
That's
right. Oh, wait, they already did.
Yeah.
All right, well, so that's pretty much us, I think, for the non-drunk, drunken podcast.
I like it.
We've done a pretty good job. So
mm-hmm.
recapping, we like the medical marijuana industry. We like Invictus.
Yep.
We like...
Patient Home Monitoring, that's V.PHM, and also Convalo Health, that's V.CX.
People can find it.
Yeah, it's
and
in there.
On Pete's side, we think Barrick is resuscitating and Manitok is ready to jump off the bottom.
I like that.
Right.
I'm ready to jump off the building.
Put all your RSPs into everything we say because we're never wrong. Said nobody here ever.
All right.
Well, tune in next week where we talk about a whole bunch of other stuff that we really, really, really hope isn't going to crap out. Bye.
Yep. Take care. Bye.
And this has been another episode of Stockhouse's Drunken Roundtable. Stay tuned next week. We'll be back with more friends, more facts, and more frivolity.